I think many of us took the view that this won't last very long. So just really go with it with the tech. You know, it doesn't matter. Let go of any limits. Just spend all the time you want. It's fine because all of this is going to be over very, very soon. Of course, we know that the problem is that it wasn't going to be over soon. It still isn't over. But if you take kind of the deeper view, the kind of psychological, the neuroscientific view, the problem is that our brain is exceptionally good at forming habits. And habits are very easy to form, but they're very, very hard to break.
Welcome to Freedom Matters, where we explore the intersection of technology, productivity, and digital well-being. I'm your host, Georgie Powell, and each week I'll be talking to experts in productivity and digital wellness. I'll be asking them three questions to get to the heart of what productivity means to them. This week, I'm in conversation with international psychologist, parenting coach, and digital wellness consultant, Teodora Pavkovic. She first became interested in digital well-being when, as a vision specialist in Singapore, she started to observe the amount of time children were spending on screens. She had one question: what happens to the parent-child connection when you insert a device in between? Today, we'll be delving into the psychology of digital well-being, how the pandemic has accelerated problems, and just how screen time affects our relationships. Teodora, welcome to Freedom Matters.
Hi, Georgie. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you for this invitation to speak to your community about some of these really, really important topics.
No worries. I'm just really excited that finally, after kind of a few years of ping bowling with each other, we had a chance to have a really good conversation the other day and connect. And I just thought it was really fascinating. And I think a lot of our audience has a lot to learn from you as a psychologist. And I thought you had some really interesting reflections on last year and what we saw through the pandemic in terms of our relationship with technology, and perhaps some little insights into what we could have or should have done differently. I'd love to hear again some of your observations.
Sure. Well, I think we're all pretty aware of the fact that there was, of course, a huge surge in digital consumption and our presence online, and a kind of mass migration to the virtual world. And if we weren't very avid users before, I think we definitely became that in 2020, kind of whether we wanted to or not. And by about, I think it was April of last year, the increase in traffic just to children's websites and platforms went up by about 75%. So very early on, we could really tell what was going on. So most of us had to move online for work, even if we didn't want to. It was just kind of a new demand there if we wanted to hold on to our jobs. If we have kids, both we and they had to move online for, you know, the sake of their education. And then I think the rest of it was due to this kind of coping mechanism, I guess we could call it, that inevitably led us to binge on Netflix, doom scroll through news headlines, and share our private lives on TikTok. And many people actually also found that they were working more hours because their work was right there. Really, all that stood between them and work was just a screen. And so I think one of the things that COVID demanded of us that we didn't yet have at the beginning is not only a way to manage it, but to manage our digital consumption and our relationship to tech. And of course, we had no idea how to do that. We still, I think, have a lot to learn. When I say we, I definitely include myself in that group as well. I mean, when it comes to that question of what we should have done differently, that is a very dangerous game to play. I think we're all at that phase where we are starting to engage with that question, but it's probably asking for the improbable, like hindsight normally does. But what I would say is taking the longer view of the pandemic, which I guess is the answer to a lot of these questions around what we could have done differently or better, or what we could have improved on. I think many of us took the view that this won't last very long. So just really go with it with the tech. You know, it doesn't matter. Let go of any limits. Just spend all the time you want. It's fine because all of this is going to be over very, very soon. Of course, we know that the problem is that it wasn't going to be over soon. It still isn't over. But if you take kind of the deeper view, the kind of psychological, the neuroscientific view, the problem is that our brain is exceptionally good at forming habits. And habits are very easy to form, but they're very, very hard to break. I always like to say that unlearning is infinitely harder than learning. because once you have already kind of taken on certain practices, certain habits, your brain gets very comfortable with it, takes it on, goes right, now I'm set, I don't have to change anything. So that change is always very, very difficult. And that's the place that we're at right now. So we're stuck with these bad habits, both kids and adults alike. And actually, many experts are saying, well, I wish I had encouraged people to stick to some form of structure when it comes to tech use. And you and I spoke about this when we first talked about it. It's not I told you so, although it is a little bit, I suppose, but I felt very strongly about this at the very beginning. And at times, I felt kind of uncomfortable sharing that view myself, but I did feel very strongly from the very beginning about this, that we really have to be careful about how much leeway we give ourselves, I guess, both ourselves and our kids, for this reason. And I know this as somebody who has had issues myself, that I've had to work on things like food consumption. Food is a very, very big one for me. It's something I've had to kind of manage my whole life. Exercise as well. I'm naturally not the most active, let's go for a run for a marathon kind of person. So I've had to work on this my whole life. And through that and through my background in psychology, I know how easy it is to really relax into a new pattern and just how difficult it is to then have to break that pattern. So I was one of the people saying, let's please not let go of at least some kind of semblance of order when it comes to how we consume technology, because if we just consume as much as we want, pretty much the same thing that happens with food will happen to us. Of course, what's made it even more difficult is that then you've had this influx of new technologies coming out, like TikTok, which became hugely popular during the pandemic. The tech companies, mm-hmm. marketers caught on to these new patterns that we engaged in and gave us even more digital content to mm-hmm. consume and even more digital platforms on which we could spend our time. And so I think we're slowly kind of starting to recover, because I think we don't feel good anymore. I think that's one of the things COVID has taught us. And one of the reasons why I'm grateful for it is that it's really given us the opportunity to test out what too much looks like. And I think we have a relatively good idea now of what that is. And so now I'm quite encouraged by the fact that I think we're in this place where we're saying, okay, let's now think about how we want to fix this, how we want to improve this, how do we want to relate better to our technology.
I'm so grateful for your positive spin on that today, because I'm increasingly feeling this sentiment that people are just exhausted. But maybe you're right, maybe there is also kind of this awakening of, hang on a minute, if we're in this for longer term, we need to take back control of how we're living our lives, how we're spending our time, how we're kind of expending our energy. So yeah, let's hope more people have learned from that. I think as well, people learned quite positively about how to use tech in ways that we hadn't thought of before, and a lot more people got involved in using it in a positive way, which was something that was really good. Related to that, what I find really interesting about what you do is your psychological toolkit that you can use to help people build healthier relationships with technology. I think you refer to three different practices that kind of are your default go-tos, which I found really, really interesting when we last spoke. And I wonder if you could share a bit about those to our audience.
Sure. So yeah, my approach to healthy technology use and management is, of course, psychological. It comes from that place of deeper psychological, and I mentioned neuroscience earlier, neuroscientific research as well. And so there are three areas or principles, I guess we could call them, that I use in my work with my clients. And these are emotional intelligence, positive psychology, and cognitive behavioral theory. Emotional intelligence to me is probably one of the most, if not the most important kind of intelligence on the planet. And in the simplest terms, what emotional intelligence means is just simply being smart with our emotions. So knowing what we're feeling, being able to accurately label it. So emotional literacy is really important. Being able to regulate our emotions, yeah. And then being able to kind of recognize them in other people as well. And I find that to be a beautiful way of identifying how technology is impacting us, to really look inward and look at how you're feeling about it and be able to really talk about that in a lot of detail. Mm-hmm. When it comes to positive psychology, at the end of our previous question, you mentioned my kind of positive take on things, and that really does have a lot to do with, on the one hand, my temperament. I think I naturally am a kind of a positive, optimistic person, but the part of my background is also in positive psychology. And positive psychology is really all about asking the question of, what are you already doing well what are you already doing right? And that's a huge perspective shift for psychology, where we used to constantly ask, what's wrong with you? What's broken? What do you need me to fix? What do you need me to make better? Mm-hmm. This is all about asking, what are you already doing well? And what is already working? And I think that's an important question to ask, again, when it comes to tech use, because not all of it is bad and not all of it is horrible and all of it is evil. Mm-hmm. There are really great elements to it. And we need to understand which one of those elements are already present with people so that we can really amplify them and increase them and use them as inspiration for people to then continue to improve the way they engage with technology and the way they create through technology. And then the final bit is the kind of the cognitive behavioral theory part. And what that mostly looks at really is our thoughts. Our thoughts and the way we think have such a huge impact on how we behave, on the actual decisions that we make around what we're going to do really from one second to the next. But the problem is, and you know, anybody who engages in mindfulness practices knows this, is that we're really unaware of most of the things that we're thinking about. These thoughts tend to take place on more subconscious levels. And so what I always try to encourage my clients to do is to really notice those little kind of pesky thoughts that will come up and that will, you know, result in you staying on Netflix for 5 or 6 hours and feel horrible at the end of it, or engage in doom scrolling for an hour and again just feel horrible and feel like the world is just about to end. To really look at what are the thoughts that are kind of leading you to the behaviors that you're seeing and that you want to change, because once we can kind of shine a light on that, and once we can become really aware of how our thoughts dictate what we do on a daily basis, we can really make more informed and conscious decisions around that, around how we want to change our technology use. So we look at what's good already, and we take that and we amplify it. We look at the things that we're really not crazy about and that are really not helping us to thrive and improve and get better, help our relationships better, help our parenting be better, all of those things. We want to take away those, and we really want to amplify the positives.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And I guess these are thinking about these sort of skills and the development of our brains and our minds and the effort and attention that you have to place on consciously crafting your relationship with technology. How do you think this is going to all develop? What is the future looking like? What's your view of how this is all going to play out?
Well, I think in terms of the different forms, I guess, that tech is going to take, I would imagine it's only going to continue becoming increasingly frictionless and increasingly seamless and increasingly integrated, which are some of the main words, obviously, that are always used. And I'm not a tech person, so of course, I'm sharing my insights as a psychologist and kind of the observations that I've been making around technology. I think that's the direction that technology, at least modern mobile technology, has been moving in. And I think it will only continue that way. And I just want to share with you just very briefly kind of my definition of what it means to be digitally well, because I think it emphasizes some of these ideas that I was sharing. I typically define it as using technology mindfully, intentionally, and humanely in such a way that it doesn't tarnish your psychological and emotional well-being or the psychological and emotional well-being of others. So you can see even in that definition, I use the words mindfully and intentionally, very much intentionally and on purpose. I think those are incredibly important mental states to be in regardless. It's not something that we've invented in the year 2021. A lot of Eastern philosophies have been talking about bringing intention to our daily living for hundreds and thousands of years even. But I think that's something that we're starting to lose a little bit, because technology is built the way it is. So much of it is designed with these ideas of a lack of friction and seamlessness at their very core. And they're designed with huge amounts of repetition and predictability built in, right? Which means you're constantly running in that hamster wheel because you know exactly what your email is going to do and what Instagram is going to do and your WhatsApp is going to do. And so you become habituated to the way in which these platforms work. And then if you spend most of your days on them, like we're doing now, without too much kind of conscious and again mindful planning or control over your time, you can see easily how they can lead to this sort of numbness of your senses on the one hand, but then on the other hand also this frustration, which is what I'm seeing coming up for a lot of people as well, because our bodies and our brains, they yearn for nature and they yearn for time spent with other people, and they yearn even for time spent alone, which our technology nowadays makes very, very difficult. It's very hard to be alone nowadays, to really truly be alone.
I love this, not concept, but the reality that the tech is training us for a frictionless mind pattern where it's very much based on consumption and it's auto-generated and it's there for us. Whereas the skill set that we need to navigate technology in a more healthy and mindful way is actually to be comfortable with friction and to take ourselves away from this kind of automatic consumption pattern and to sit back and to challenge and to be mindful. And so it's kind of like which default operating mode is going to win out more quickly. We need to super skill the capabilities to kind of overpower that. I think that's a really interesting tension.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would just make one more comment. And I think this is very interesting, especially for those of our listeners who are parents and who do have kids and who do wonder about their future and what that's going to look like surrounded by all of this tech. I think that word friction is really important. And we talk about it a lot in the digital wellness space. But looking at it outside of tech, as children, we need lots of that friction, the safe kind, obviously, in our interactions with other people around us, in our attempts to accomplish something. It's really those roadblocks in life that have resulted in every single piece of innovation that we see in this world. A lot of the time people, you know, parents will ask questions around, well, I want my kid to be like Steve Jobs and Bill Gates and all of these people. And when we talk about that innovation in tech, people like Bill Gates and Steve Jobs and Elon Musk, they didn't create what they have because they had an overabundance of resources that were super frictionless and easily accessible. They did it because they had a lack. And that lack creates the friction, which then demands the effort, which demands creativity, which demands problem solving. And that then results in development and innovation and all of these really kind of crazy and out there ideas that these people brought to life. And it wasn't, they didn't just stop at the ideas. They made something very, very real out of these, but that came from friction. And that's that kind of tug of war that I know you as a parent will understand as well, but it's that constant balance of kind of making sure that they're fine and that they're comfortable and that they have everything that they need. But on the other hand, also making sure that they're really being challenged and that our expectations of them are matching their abilities. I think technology makes it a lot easier for us to falter because technology answers a lot of questions for us, and it resolves a lot of kind of uncomfortable things and activities that we'd really much rather not engage in. But I think it's spilled over into a lot of areas of life where we need that friction and we really need to put in the effort and we really need to try hard. Otherwise, we're never going to step out of our comfort zone. And again, I'm sure everyone has seen that little graphic with the circle saying comfort zone and then the circle way out on one side saying this is where you need to be if you're going to create anything.
Oh gosh, I could talk to you for hours on this. How often should I let my child tantrum? Is this okay? But unfortunately, we are out of time for this session. Maybe we can have you back on again in a few months' time because I'd love to hear more. And if anyone else wants to hear more, links to what Teodora does, you can find in the show notes to today's episode. Teodora, thank you so much. You've been a fabulous guest. Good luck in the next few weeks, next few months, coming out, hopefully, of this pandemic. And thank you so much for sharing your knowledge with us.
Thank you, Georgie. Thank you so much again for the invitation. And thank you to all of our listeners for being here with us. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on Freedom Matters. If you like what you hear, then subscribe on your favorite platform. And until next time, we wish you happy, healthy, and productive days.